It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Later this month at Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens, one of the rarest, largest, and smelliest flowers, the legendary corpse flower, is set to bloom. Beyond its impressive size and dramatic appearance, the corpse flower is most famous for its foul smell, which, along with its meat-like coloration, mimics rotten flesh. Affectionately named Romero, after Night of the Living Dead director and Pittsburgh native George Romero, Phipps Corpse Flower is now on display in the Palm Court until it blooms later this month. I'm joined now in Studio A by Ben Dunnigan, curator of horticulture at the Phipps. Ben Dunnigan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me today, Paul.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm if you have questions about the corpse flower. And Ben, my first question for you is, where on earth did the corpse flower come from?
Well, it came from all the way across the world in the jungles of Sumatra, Indonesia.
The jungles of Sumatra, Indonesia. Describe this flower to us. What are some of the characteristics of it that make it so unusual?
Well, it's in the Araceae family, and really the one that a lot of people know about is a calla lily. And so what it has is it has a center column called a spadix and a sheath that surrounds it called a spathe, both of which are consistent to that plant family. It's a very large, and as you mentioned before, it has a really beautiful deep purple coloration to it.
And what is the purpose of the stench that it emits? Because this is why we're talking about this. Let's face it. It's all about the smell, which I guess you just have to smell it to believe it. But what is the whole reason for it?
Yeah,
why did nature do this to us?
You really do have to smell it to believe it. But, you know, it wouldn't be doing this for no reason at all. And the reason why it does it is because at the forest floor, you don't have your typical bees that would be a pollinator to flowers. What the types of insects that you have at the forest floor are flies and beetles. And to attract a fly to become pollinated, what better way to get a fly into the flower than to smell like a rotting corpse.
How ingenious. But there's more to it than that. I mean, it really tries to, or the plant, there are all these things that it goes through, these manifestations that are almost human-like, in order to really throw that smell off at a great distance to, you know, attract it flies from all corners of the globe, it would seem.
Yeah. Well, you could smell one of these in the forest for, you know, many miles away.
Miles?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I'm not expecting that ours is going to be that strong. It's going to be in a confined space, as we mentioned, the palm court. But really what's happening there is where normal flowers have sweet smells, this smell that is very pungent is the chemicals that are in there are sulfuric compounds, and so many people know sulfur kind of smells like rotting eggs, but from a chemistry perspective, those are very heavy molecules, and to get those molecules to volatilize and to evaporate into the air, you need to increase the temperature of the flower, which is another interesting feature. At the bloom time, this flower will actually heat up to near 100 degrees to help evaporate those different sulfuric compounds and to spread that smell around the forest.
So the flower heats up almost to the same as a human body temperature.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, if you were to look on some images online, there's a lot of really good documentation of people standing next to these flowers while they're blooming. And you can clearly see through thermal imaging that the flower is very, very hot, just as and sometimes even hotter than the people standing next to it.
So if you're looking through from a distance through thermal imaging, you would see or you would know, hey, there's a corpse flower over there.
You could, yeah, indeed, you could, you know, fly across the, you know, and look down, and assuming you had some the ability to see past the canopy that would typically grow above it, you would definitely see these, yeah.
Now, there's that old saying that, you know, you attract more flies with honey, and some of that must come from the idea that, you know, flowers attract insects, they smell good. So why would a flower – I mean, I you mentioned earlier about, you know, the whole attraction of flies to meat, or in this case, you know, something that's rotting.
Mm-hmm.
But why wouldn't it be – wouldn't it be just as easy to – if the flower smelled good to attract the insects that it needs?
Well, in this case, really what the fly would be attracted to is not a quick meal like a bee would be if they're going to collect nectar from a flower. The fly is actually looking for a place to lay its eggs. And so a rotting corpse would be a much more ideal place for a fly to set its eggs than a flower would be.
If anybody happens to be eating as we have this discussion, our apologies. Is the smell more intense at certain times than at others?
It is. There's about 48 hours where the flower is in full bloom. And of that 48 hours, there's 12 hours where it's the most intense. Of course, there's some lingering smells around the 12 hours, but that's the point where it's just really, really putrid.
We're talking about the corpse flower set to bloom at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens with Ben Dunnigan. He's the curator of horticulture at the Phipps. And this plant, there's this drama surrounding, you know, when it starts to emit the smell, and that happens over how long of a period?
Well, the smell is about, like I mentioned, is about 12 hours. The full bloom, while it's fully open, is about 48 hours. Of course, these are give or take. And but the lead up to that 48 hours is quite dramatic. And we're encouraging people to come back many times because I can tell you today when I measured it, it's already 43 inches tall, and that grew 3.5 inches since yesterday. So you can practically sit and watch this thing grow.
And so there's the bloom, and then it throws off the smell, which is, you know, why a lot of people will want to see this and or experience it. And then what happens?
Well, basically, the plant is sustained by an underground tuber, similar to a bulb or a corm that a crocus, tulip, or daffodil would have around here. And just like those plants, after they've flowered and bloomed, they die back to the ground. So you might not even know one is there if it was in its dormant state. And what's really interesting to botanists is that there's no rhyme or reason as to why these things break dormancy. You could have one bloom in the winter, in the spring, in the summer. And so when one happens, it's always an exciting event for us.
And then it decomposes.
Right, yeah.
So how does it survive?
Well, it survives as an underground plant. It has a tuber that survives underground.
So even though all this happens, it still will bloom again. But it's a long time between blooms, right?
Yeah, it is very long, and that's one of the interesting
things. How long
things.
Is it?
There's been some that have recorded that have bloomed only 3 years after a previous bloom, but in many cases they can go 10, 12, you know, 13 years before blooming again.
So will you keep Romero around so that it, you know, 10 years from now in, you know, 2023 that it people can come back and see it bloom again?
Yes. We will definitely be keeping Romero around. A lot of questions – sometimes people ask me, will we pollinate it? And for a few reasons, I've decided not to. And one of the reasons not to pollinate it is because while the corm or tuber weighs over 60 pounds, that's still small in relation to some of the other ones out there. And by pollinating it, a lot of that energy would go into creating seeds. And so to keep Romero healthy, we're going to forego pollination in this account.
Now, there's an interesting history behind this plant, the corpse flower, and leave it to the English. They apparently were the first to make a spectacle out of this particular plant back in 1889. Tell us how the corpse flower was first cultivated for public garden display in England.
Yeah, certainly. Well, initially it was an Italian, Edoardo Bacciari, who was the first to discover this in the jungles of Sumatra. He described it to science and then collected seeds, in which he sent to the Royal Botanic Gardens at Kew in London. And then about 20 years later, the botanists at Kew were able to grow it and get it to produce a flower. It was the first of its kind ever in recorded history in the West. And at that point, it just created an incredible stir in England. In fact, an interesting tidbit to mention is the famous musical Little Shop of Horrors, which has the carnivorous plant named Audrey. The author of that musical was actually inspired by one of these blooms.
But this is not a carnivorous plant.
No, this is not a carnivorous plant. This is just a plant that smells as if it might be.
But it's not like a Venus flytrap. What are some of the other carnivorous plants out there?
Well, there's honeydews, also pitcher plants, and then Venus flytraps would be the three that come to my mind.
Right. But, you know, there's no such thing as man-eating plants, right?
No, it's not a man-eating plant.
Glad to hear that. just making sure. And how did the corpse flower end up in Pittsburgh?
Well, we acquired one in 2010. As curator, I really wanted to bring one of these in. It's always been kind of something that I've been kicking around in the back of my head. And once I looked through some of the records that Phipps has, I discovered that there had never been a recorded corpse flower bloom at our facility. And as Pittsburgh's leading horticultural institute, we felt that it would be a really great opportunity to engage the community with plants.
Can you predict when it'll bloom?
Well, that is probably the biggest question I get. And like a doctor can predict the birth of a baby, I could give you a date, but I can't say for sure as to whether or not it'll come early or later. What we're telling people is to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're giving daily updates on its progress. But if I had to be put on the spot, I think it's likely to bloom around the week of the 18th.
The week of the 18th of this month. So
of
in about less than 10 days.
Approximately, yeah. Like I said, it's really hard to give you an exact date, but that would be my best expert opinion.
And if it blooms late at night, which apparently that's the prime time, then how will people be able to see it?
Well, what we're planning on doing is during the blooming event, Phipps will be staying open till 2 a.m. During that 48-hour period and possibly longer depending on how long Romero wants to stay in full bloom. but we're going to make it a really fun event. We're going to have different movies airing. I'm not sure which ones. I know there's some talk about Night of the Living Dead and The Corpse Bride for kids, which is a fun one for the kids. And then
might as well have Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, possibly Little Shop of Horrors. we'll have to check on that. I'm not 100% certain. We're going to have drink specials and cafe specials and really try to make it a fun event for people to come out to see.
It sounds like it will be a lot of fun. And we'll look forward to the corpse flower blooming somewhere around the 18th. You know, you could have some fun with people making predictions on this too as well, I suppose. It's a fascinating story. The corpse flower, which has been given the name Romero again after Night of the Living Dead director and Pittsburgh native George Romero, on display now as we speak at the Palm Court at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens until it blooms later this month. And I've been joined here in Studio A by Ben Dunnigan. He's curator of horticulture at the Phipps and an expert on the corpse flower. Ben, fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, happy to be here. Thanks again.
Coming up, the science of beauty. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.